Welcome to JFK Spotlight on Health, where we highlight the groundbreaking work being done at JFK University Medical Center in Edison, part of the Hackensack Meridian Health Network. I'm Joel Katz, and my guest today is Dr. Aziz Merchant, General Minimally Invasive and Robotic Surgeon at JFK Hackensack Meridian Health. Good morning, doctor.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
Thanks for being here. Thanks for taking the time. Well, let's jump in. We know your specialty, right? We do want to focus on the topic of the day is groin hernia, something that some people may have had, some people may have not, some people didn't even know it existed. So let's start with that. What is groin hernia?
Well, a groin hernia is basically not to keep it overly simple, but it is a hernia of the groin area.
Mm-hmm.
A hernia is the best way to think about a hernia is when you have contents from a body cavity going into another cavity where it doesn't belong. So that's true for a groin hernia. That's true for a belly button hernia. That's true for a brain hernia when the brain herniates in a trauma. It's going from a cavity where it belongs to a cavity where it doesn't belong. In the setting of a groin hernia, the cavity is the abdominal cavity where you have your intestines and your colon and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And the contents of the abdominal cavity is pushing through a weakness of the abdominal wall through something called an inguinal canal or a groin canal. It's like a tunnel, and it tunnels through the weakness, and it ends up near the scrotum. So it kind of tunnels through the abdominal cavity and into the scrotum where it doesn't belong.
So is it moving or is it expanding?
It's a little bit of both, and it's a sort of a dynamic situation, if you will. So, the patient would see a bulge in the area of the groin, but that bulge can sometimes get bigger. It can get smaller. It can change in size based on whether you're coughing, you're laughing, you're sneezing, you're doing some type of heavy activity. And in some cases, it can push through and get stuck and therefore become immobile.
Now, you mentioned it could get bigger, it could get smaller. How many people or men have you experienced where because it does that, they wait and they wait, and then by the time they get to you, they really shouldn't have waited?
Almost every patient. Everybody, sees a groin hernia down there. And most of the time, it's really just, you see a bulge. Maybe you're in the shower. Maybe you're doing some type of activity. You notice a bulge. And people will immediately say, oh, I think it's a hernia. And then the first thing that gets in their mind is, oh, no, this may need surgery. And so that they sort of end up getting scared from that perspective, and then they kind of just leave it be. It pushes in easily. It doesn't cause any pain or discomfort, so they leave it alone. And then it begins to grow in size slowly, but, very slowly, millimeter by millimeter, it grows in size. You don't really notice it day to day, and then it starts to maybe cause symptoms and hurt. And then by the time they come to see me, it's a fairly large hernia.
So it's safe to say that it's not going to go away on its own, ever.
Hernias cannot be fixed through medication or, observation. Hernias can only be fixed through a surgical procedure.
So once the bulge is there, that is a sign that there's something there that will not go away without some sort of procedure. If it's a hernia.
Right, pretty much. And there have been some studies done where they followed men who have these bulges that have no symptoms. And they did these studies to see, could we just not treat these patients with any surgery and just leave them be with this hernia? And what they found was the patients in which they waited, almost 70 to 80% eventually developed symptoms and needed surgery. So the answer to your question is fairly straightforward in that once you see a bulge, you're going to end up needing that bulge fixed.
Right, right. So the danger for those listening who now they know, and we know, that it's got to be fixed no matter what. If it's there, it's not going away. What's the danger of waiting? What's the worst case scenario?
Well, so let's
probably pretty
let's
bad.
Take a step back. So the most common thing that'll happen if you wait, is that it'll just continue to grow. In terms of worst case scenario, imagine you've got a small canal and a small hole out of which your intestines are coming out of the other end, and those intestines now get swollen and they can't get pushed back in, and so now they're stuck, and that's called incarceration. So imagine, you know, when you've got a pair of handcuffs on your wrist and you can't pull your hands back through the handcuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the inguinal canal, if you will, or the defect in the abdominal wall is doing. It's acting like a handcuff around the contents of the hernia that's come out, and it's preventing it from going back in. That's called incarceration. The next step after incarceration is, imagine if that handcuff around your wrist gets really, really tight because your hand, for some reason, gets very swollen. Well, now the blood supply to your hand gets cut off. Same concept with a hernia. The contents of the hernia comes through. Now it's stuck. It gets inflamed. It gets swollen. And the blood supply stops to the intestines that are pushed out. And that's called strangulation. So incarceration and strangulation are the worst case scenarios. And if you have a hernia that's stuck that cannot be pushed back in, you need to come to the emergency room, and you will most likely need to get that surgically taken care of, because we don't want it to progress to strangulation.
Is it an obvious diagnosis? Like, can a patient self-diagnose pretty easily? They see a bulge. Is that 9 times out of 10 what it is, or is that what it is all the time?
I would say, not everything is 0 or 100%
right.
In life. So I would say that the 9 out of 10 number is probably pretty accurate. If you see a bulge down there, especially in a man, then it most likely is a hernia, or you should at least get it checked out. You can see if the bulge is uncomfortable if you do certain things like coughing and sneezing or lifting something up. You can see if that bulge, if you can lie down and push it back in, and then maybe if you stand up, it comes back out again. Then you have a little bit more of a convincing diagnosis, self-diagnosis, mm-hmm. if you will, of a hernia.
And how is it? Has it ever? I'm sure it has it at some point. But how often does it happen where someone just goes to the doctor for a normal visit and then they're diagnosed with something like this, where they don't even see it or not aware of it?
Fairly frequently. Fairly frequently,
yeah.
We get, in fact, aside from self-diagnosis, the other common way is when a primary care physician or a doctor is examining you, sees your groin, and, you know, you may not see the bulge for various reasons, but the doctor who's looking down there may see it, and they may diagnose the hernia.
What causes? Is there something that happens? My mom used to say, don't lift anything that's too heavy, you'll get a hernia.
Right. Yeah, a lot of people, have been told that. And the reality is that there has to be a pre-existing weakness in the abdominal wall for you to be able to lift something up and then suddenly that hernia appears. And what's really happening is that you probably have a very small, tiny weakness or defect that just got bigger when you stressed it out with lifting something or doing something that increases the pressure of your abdomen, such as, you know, coughing. People who are who have a chronic cough or respiratory disease can develop hernias. People who are working in hard labor type situations can get hernias. And for a lot of these people, there's almost a pre-existing weakness that can occur. I have a lot of patients who come in saying, I got this hernia, I got into a car accident, and then the thing popped out, or I lifted something and I felt a pop. It's
right.
Extremely rare for somebody who does not have any type of a defect or weakness of the abdominal wall to suddenly develop a brand new weakness or tear or hole which causes a hernia, because the abdominal wall, the fascia, the white lining of the abdominal wall and the musculature is so strong that the amount of force it would take to tear it and then to have a hernia come through would be a tremendous amount of trauma. So that's why I believe that many of these defects do pre-exist. Maybe you had a small hernia that you never really noticed, mm-hmm. and then it got bigger when you did something.
So you're more likely to pull a muscle or hurt your back than you are to pop a hernia when you're lifting something.
100%. 100%. Okay. You are more likely to do that. And in fact, there is an entity called a sports hernia, which is a bit of a misnomer because it's not really a hernia. What it really is a tear of, you know, ligaments and fibers, mm-hmm. Either near the pubic bone or along the canal up by the hip area. And that tends to occur in people who do activities and or athletics where the lower body seems to be turning a lot. So football, soccer, hockey, you know, hard labor where you're twisting your upper body quite a bit. Those types of things can cause this entity, which is a sports hernia, which is not really a hernia. It's more of a ligamentous sort of tear and inflammatory process.
So that chubby checker wasn't helping anybody with that twist song, was he?
Well, you know, let's hope not too many people are doing that in the middle of football.
Doing the twist. It sounds like it's more common than men. Is it more common in men than women or no?
Yes. Groin hernias are more common in men and women in men than they are in women. Although there is a version of an inguinal hernia, it's called a femoral hernia, and it's basically in the same region, except whereas an inguinal hernia kind of grows into your scrotum, a femoral hernia kind of goes downward a little bit, more sort of into your thigh area. And that hernia tends to be a bit more common in women, but overall, groin hernias collectively are more common in men. And if you break down groin hernia to what we call an inguinal hernia, which is the one that goes in the scrotum, or a femoral hernia, the inguinal hernias are far more common.
Okay. We're talking with Dr. Aziz Merchant, general minimally invasive and robotic surgeon at JFK Hackensack Meridian Health. So I find out I have a bulge. I think it's a hernia. I go and get it checked out. It is a hernia. How do we treat it?
So the short answer is you need to have it surgically repaired. There are several different ways to do surgery on hernia, and a lot of that depends on the experience of the surgeon and the availability of resources at that hospital. So among the most common ways, which is sort of the time-tested way that's always been there, is what we call open surgery, where you make a cut probably about, I'm not good with measurements, but I'm looking at my hands right now, I'm going to say maybe 5 inches
okay.
of an incision in the groin area. And you basically find the weakness and you repair it with a piece of mesh. And I'll talk about that in a second.
Okay.
Or you can do it in a minimally invasive fashion where you do a couple of small holes on your abdomen and you go in from the inside underneath the muscle and the muscular areas and you place a piece of mesh from down below. So you can have open surgery with a cut 5-6 inches long, or you can have minimally invasive surgery. Now, minimally invasive surgery can be done through a standard, what we call laparoscopy, which is basically using a long, thin camera and long, thin instruments mm-hmm. with your hands. Or you can use, or some surgeons, including myself, would do it robotically, which is still through small holes, except we use a robot that helps control the instruments, and we're sitting on a console operating. When we do hernia repairs, the most important concept is what we call a tension-free repair. In the very, very old days, hernias used to be repaired where they would basically find the hole and they would stitch it together, which made sense at the time. But then they realized that a lot of these hernias were coming back because that area down in the groin is a very tense area trying to bring things together. And so then the next development that occurred was using a mesh. So instead of actually closing the hole, you patched the hole with a piece of mesh.
Okay.
And that created a tension-free repair, which resulted in better outcomes and less chances of the hernia coming back.
Well, you see, you talk about the two ways. You can either have a 5 or 6 inch cut, or you can have two tiny. Like, why would anybody choose the open surgery?
Well, so the minimally invasive is about 3 small cuts. The open surgery is about 4. It's about 4 or 5, maybe 6 inches long.
Yeah, that's significant.
There are various reasons that you would need the open versus the laparoscopic.
Okay. If
all things being equal, most patients will choose the minimally invasive version because there is some less pain. There's a quicker recovery to work. Interestingly enough, overall, both repairs are fairly equal in terms of outcomes, overall pain control, and overall lifestyle. In general, they're about the same. With the open surgery, there is a bit of a higher risk of infection because you have a bigger cut
right. That
can get infected. There are reasons that as a surgeon, I may recommend an open repair as opposed to a minimally invasive repair, depending on the overall strength and health of a patient. So the open surgery can actually be done with local anesthetic, or maybe even an epidural. This is good especially for patients who may not have enough strength and health to tolerate full general anesthesia. The minimally invasive surgeries, for the most part, need general anesthesia. So you have to be a good, healthy candidate for full general anesthesia. So that's some of the differences as to why some people would get one and some people would get another.
Okay. And is the surgery, I think you already answered this, but the surgery, is that always necessary when it comes to this type of hernia? Are there other options other than surgery?
Well, there's always other options, but when I talk to a patient, I try to stick to the science that's out there.
Right.
And the science tells us that, you can wait to not have the hernia repaired, and you can watch it and observe it, but about three out of four people will end up eventually needing surgery sometime in the future. And at that time, when they need the surgery, there's a chance that the hernia may get bigger, may get more complicated,
mm-hmm.
and therefore make the surgery a bit more complicated.
Right, it would be
so
more
that's
difficult.
That's the information I tend to give people. And, I let people make their own decision as to which way they want to go with that.
Whether someone waits or they have the surgery right away, the surgery overall, what is the success rate? I would imagine it's pretty high.
It is. I mean, and with the technology and the science and the research that's occurred in this, we've gotten better and better as a community of surgeons around the world repairing groin hernias. If you look at all hernias that are repaired on the abdominal wall, about 1 in 5 tend to come back. But that's looking at all hernias, all sizes, all complex hernias. For groin hernias, you're generally looking at somewhere between, I would say, a 3 to 5 or a 3 to 7% chance of recurrence, which means that about greater than 90% of the time it's successful in fixing it.
Okay. And this procedure, I mean, how long has it been around and how has the treatment changed over the years?
Hernia repair has been around probably for... I'm not good with medical history, but I'm going to say probably a good 50 to 70
right.
Years, maybe even more than that. And it's gone through a lot of iterations, and a lot of famous surgeons, have gotten their name, creating hernia repairs and so on. Yeah.
So is there a merchant procedure?
There could be a merchant somewhere who's got something named after them. Hopefully we don't get mixed up.
Well, when I asked you how it's changed over the years, the success rate you said now is like 90% or over 90%. At what point did it, what'd you say?
You're correct.
It's right. So 90%. Do you recall a time or do you know a time when it was like, this is not a good sign because the success rate isn't very high on this? Because I guess it was new at the time. I'm guessing this would be back 50 to 70 years ago when you're, you know.
Yeah. This was the, what we call the tension-free repair is a fairly old repair. And mm-hmm. when I began my training back in around 2000, the tension-free repair was the standard of care at that time. So I don't know personally or professionally, have not been in an era where, you know, we had the non-tension-free repair and we were all wondering about the success rate and whether we're doing, you know, whether it's good or bad. You know, the success rate has been pretty good for a long time mm-hmm. with the tension-free repair. The things that I've seen in my career are the approaches that have developed, the minimally invasive and the robotic and the different kind of meshes that have come out and so on.
Now, when you were in medical school, was the robotic, you were learning that then, right? That wasn't...
No, so the robotic technology is, I would say, fairly recent. Again, back when I trained in 2000 in my residency, you know, there was really not anything in the way of robotic surgery, but as you know, as time went on, and the robotic surgery began to develop, then it sort of caught on. But very early in my training, definitely not in medical school, but very early in my training, in residency, there was really no robotics. What we were doing was minimally invasive surgery through laparoscopy and small holes. That definitely was happening when I was training.
So we only have a minute or two left. If you could just to wrap it up, kind of. Recap a little bit. Can you give an example, a typical patient from start to finish, from when they get the hernia to being diagnosed and then, of course, going through the surgery and recuperating?
Sure. So I guess the one thing I would say is that I, in my career, the one thing I haven't seen is the typical patient with a hernia. But if we were to sort of create that scenario, it would be, I would say, probably somebody in their, you know, 20s, 30s, or 40s who, you know, basically maybe one day they're doing something and they notice a bulge, or their, you know, their significant other maybe notices a bulge, or their primary care physician sees the bulge down there in the groin.
Mm-hmm.
I would say the typical patient probably doesn't immediately seek surgical consultation, but at some point, we'll get to see a surgeon. Maybe some symptoms have developed with some pain in the area. They'll see me in the office. If it's a pretty clear bulge, a pretty clear diagnosis on examination, then there's really nothing else to do except recommend surgical repair at that point. So then we schedule them for surgery. Maybe they'll need a medical clearance before the operation. They'll show up on the day of surgery. For me, I typically do a minimally invasive repair, either laparoscopically or robotically. They'll have the surgery done. I usually do it. I almost always use a mesh and do a tension-free repair.
Mm-hmm.
They'll go home the same day, and then they'll see me back, you know, regularly out to a couple of months just to make sure that everything's healing okay.
Dr. Aziz Merchant, thank you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you to Dr. Aziz Merchant, general minimally invasive and robotic surgeon at JFK Hackensack Meridian Health. Thank you for joining us this morning. For more info, go to jfkmc.org or to reach Dr. Aziz Merchant, you can call 732-346-5400 and ask for Dr. Merchant. For a podcast of this show, go to foxsportsradionewjersey.com. It's JFK Spotlight on Health, brought to you by Hackensack Meridian Health. Keep getting better. I'm Joel Katz. Talk to you next time.